Hello and welcome to the EV Cafe Takeaway, that podcast focused on a zero emission future that we all hope for. And some hope for it more than most. And we are talking to somebody today that hoped for it long before many other people, I suspect. Now, you may have noticed, for the wildly observant amongst you, that I'm not speaking normally. That's because some idiot chopped a great big hole in my tongue just a couple of days ago, and not quite fully recovered yet. Anyway, so John will be doing lots of the talking today, but mostly we will be speaking to Warren Ryan Phillips. Wonderful to have you with us, Warren. Welcome.
Thanks, mate. I'm really happy to be. I don't know why you want me on here, because I don't think I'm that important, but it's
okay.
It's lovely.
So the counselling session is about to begin. by the end of this,
we
indeed,
are all important.
By the end of this, Warren, you will know why John and I think you are very important to have on this show and many other shows, quite frankly. Because you have added a lot to our industry already and are a massive part of the community. John, it's exciting, isn't it, to have Warren with us?
I'm really chuffed. I didn't know Warren until about a year ago. I'd seen a lot of his work, but we hadn't actually met. And a cowboy hat walked into the room.
Well, it wasn't Roger Atkins.
It wasn't Roger. So it must have, well, that must be Warren then. And the thing I found most wonderful about Warren is how warm and friendly he is, you know, right from the get-go, because you're a big, imposing guy. But you carry it so well, and you just are so open and friendly, and I love that about you. And from that point on, we've spoken often and shared lots, and it's been fabulous.
Typically on this show, we are automotive or electric vehicle industry related. Now, Warren, this is not your background, is it, at all? I mean, you're sort of government security level cleared, you're like James Bond. Talk to us a little bit about your personal background, but really that kind of defining moment where you founded EVA England, or were a co-founder of it. So talk to us about that.
Yeah, I was a co-founder. Like, it's not all on me. So basically, my background was engineering, so avionic engineering, British Airways, all that kind of stuff. And then I got into it. I'd always been into computers, and computers have always been my thing. And so I ended up through me being random and friendly and talking and being able to speak well, I ended up working in the City of London writing software. We wrote the FTSE 100 software at the company I worked in, and I contributed to that.
Wow.
Work. So that the index calculation software was what we did. And so I ended up doing IT stuff and running a team, age 25, running a team in London, doing various bits and pieces, crazy money, crazy stress. And then 9/11 kind of wiped out a lot of our income. So I got made redundant, went to local government, did stuff with them, and then got headhunted from them to work for one of their suppliers. So I worked with a company called OpenText, who do document management. So looking after documents, basically, and got into that whole looking after document, making sure it was all done, governance, all that kind of stuff, that compliance and bits and pieces. And then got made redundant there, ended up with a big company called Mott MacDonald, who do massive, massive projects. You know, IT security kind of became my thing, governance, compliance, all those things kind of worked through. And then I can't talk about what stuff I did there because of, you know, what I did there. But yeah, government contracts and other bits and pieces and security stuff and investigations and, you know, putting things together. Kind of really, my brain works in that, where's the risk and how to put things together. And how I got into this is nothing to do with any of that. So how I got into this. So some people know this already. It's not a secret. This is kind of what happened. I met my wonderful wife. She's the best thing in my life. And we got pregnant. She got pregnant. And it was a difficult pregnancy. So I changed my job out of IT to kind of do, to work in energy, in Mott, because Mott is a massive company, does lots of things. So I worked in transmission, so thermal generation transmission, which is basically burning stuff and then transmitting electricity, right? So I have a real understanding of the energy market and how all that stuff works, and like massive civil infrastructure projects, all this stuff kind of comes to that, and the finances that go with it, which really helps with what we do, right? And then my daughter was born. It was a really difficult birth. They handed the baby to us briefly to kind of talk to us about this, and they gave me the baby and then pushed me out of the room, and then they tried to save my wife, and I sat in a room on my own for, it felt like an eternity. It might have been half an hour, it might have been 40 minutes with just a baby, just like you know, trying to just kind of work out what was going on with my life and what was going to happen, and with a real thought of, I could be a single parent here. What am I bringing my kid into? And what am I doing? And all the things I did. And I was that guy, right? We flew everywhere. You know, I like fast cars. I like Formula One. I like all that stuff, right? And yes, I was like, I've got to be better for her. There's two ways to go in that moment. You either hoard all the money, hoard all the resources, and build this tower around yourself and your family, and you protect your kid. And that's your instinct of that way, for most people, for me as well. But with my mind and with that risk assessment, with all the things I do, I know that's not a way, because all you do is you set yourself up as a risk. You set yourself up as a target. You will be a target for all the people who haven't got that, who want that, and you become the focus of their fear. Oh, they've taken all the money, they've done all this stuff. I didn't want that to be the world I put my daughter into. And so the decision I made was, let's make the world a better place. Let's just make the world a better place. If there's better for everybody, if we lift everybody, then everyone lives in a better place. And so, yeah, so thankfully my wife was okay. And that's kind of what I do now. I just want to make the world a better place for my daughter. So that's it. That's, none of this other stuff matters. There's no other motivation here. I don't need money. I don't need any of the other things, but for as long as I'm here, I want to try and make the world a better place because my daughter has to live in it.
And so that's your central purpose, is to make the world a better place. And sometimes it's easy to think that the little things you do don't make a difference. They don't matter. You know, on an individual level, there's not much that any of us can do to change the way the world is. It's just too massive. What makes you think that it is your duty to do that?
I don't think it's my duty. I think, so a lot of things, people talk about influence, they talk about, you know, what they can do. And it's really simple for me. It's like, lead by example, be the thing. So for me, I want to show my daughter, I want to show people that we can do it. So the biggest influence in my life have been my parents, probably, good and bad, right? So my mum taught me very much that people will help you if you are good to people. If you're good to them, they're good to you. And my dad was a bit of an enigma. We didn't get on very much for many, many years. It wasn't until he was later in his life that we kind of came back together again. Then in the period before he died, I looked after him for a while. But the thing is, it wasn't until after he died that I really learned who he was. I learned all those things that motivated him and all those things. And the things that I do are very much him, but I didn't realize he was doing those things, and I didn't know he was, because he never showed us. Now, I want my kid to know that maybe we don't have a fancy car, maybe we don't, but this is more important. The things that we do are more important, and treating people well and doing this stuff is important, and I can only do that for my kid, right? So all the other bits and pieces I do, that leading by example piece, like, if you don't follow what I do, if you don't care about what I do, that's fine. I don't need you to. I just need my kid to understand why I do what I do and what I do, and everything else will come.
I absolutely get that. What's fascinating about you, though, is that whilst you don't see your role in change as a duty, you're somebody who's a natural leader, and I suspect that's what led you to establishing the EVA of England. Talk to us about that.
So that's an interesting one. So that stems back to, so again, all this stuff was was what change can I make to influence a family? So what I started to do was we changed stuff in our house and what we did. So we started off, as everyone does, with what can we do? You know, let's be more efficient about how we do stuff, less waste, all these things. Let's change to an energy, a green tariff, right? This is easy stuff, right? Everyone kind of starts that way. And then what I did is I changed in my head to be, with my decisions, what can my decisions that I make change later? So try and build it as a foundation. So when we bought our house, we had a spreadsheet with what the things we wanted, trying to pick out the best way to do things. Me and my wife are both IT people. We're both, my wife's a project manager. Everything is project managed. but I put a priority in on solar panels and then a driveway for an electric car. And just that changed what we did and what we bought. And when we bought the house, we were in a lucky position where we'd saved up a lot of money and the house actually was fine, didn't require much. So I slapped some solar panels on. Literally the first month we were there, we got solar panels on an electric car. And that journey was difficult because there wasn't much information out there. We were trying to work it out for ourselves. So I started looking at what was going on. And there was a thing called Eco Open Homes, a transition town Worthing did. And I went there. My wife and kid were away. I went there on my own. I took the Zoe, drove down there, and then was talking to them about the things they were doing, trying to get them. And they were like, "Your house is better than ours. Why are you here?" You know. And I was showing them my apps and my bits and my power and I was taking people rides in the car because they'd never seen it. Our Zoe is 10 years old now. Like this is 2016. No one had seen this stuff, and they were like, "Well, why?" And so we went through all this stuff, and I was talking to them. They were, "Oh, I don't like the way they look on my house." I'm like, "We're standing in your front room. How much difference does it make to you right now if you're sitting in your front room? You don't care, you know. Your neighbors might be upset, but that's their problem, not yours." And then a year later, they invite me back to be in the thing. And I was like, "I don't live in Worthing. I live in Shoreham." "Oh, that's fine. We'll drive. We'll send people to your house. It's like 4 miles away, but people will come, trust me." And so I went to that first meeting of the homeowners and it was just brilliant. They were like, "Oh, I remember you from last year. I bought solar panels for you because of you. I've got a power wall because of all the stuff you talked about. We have electric cars and I put a charging point in." And it's like, "Oh, that was really cool. I didn't set out to influence them. I was just showing them what I'd done." Anyway, blah, blah, all through that, I got myself a power wall too. When it came out, Tesla power wall too. I don't know what a polite word is. I was a bit of I'm not going to swear. I'm known for swearing, so I'm not going to swear.
You can't beat the record. Ewan McTurk said six of the C word in one podcast. So you go for it, my friend.
There's a running joke with Green Flick. They can't use anything. They can't publish anything that I do because I go to the round tables and it's just me swearing. So like I'm like 30 second clips because it's just me swearing about politics and about people. Anyway, I was a bit of an arsehole about the whole thing with Tesla. I was ringing them. I was emailing them twice a week, ringing them every week. Where is it? Where is it? What's going on? What's going on? What's going on? And they started reading some of the stuff I'd written and some of the things I was doing. So they gave me the first consumer Powerwall 2 in the country because I was just belligerent about getting it. Right? I want it. I think I was the third one in the UK. One of them went to a house in Wales. One of them went to a certain Robert Llewellyn, who we know and love. And then I got mine. So I got number three, apparently. And so they put that in and they'd obviously read some of the stuff I was writing online, the bits and pieces I was doing. And so they were like, "Would you talk to journalists?" I'm like, "Of course." So I spoke to various journalists. I was in the Times. I was in, I wanted to say Auto Express did a 2-page spread about me in the house and other bits and pieces. I was doing Sussex EVs. I was helping them do stuff and I was kind of just doing community. So I love talking to the community. I love talking. I'm in the pub tonight at a retrofit thing, probably talking to them about trying to help people with their stuff. And so when the EVA stuff came up, they were looking for people and someone threw my name in and I just ended up on a Zoom call with a bunch of people talking about this and was like, "Oh, I can help with some of your IT stuff and I can do this." And then I started doing that kind of stuff. And it happened at a time in my life where my father had been very ill. And when he got ill, I made a decision that I wanted to spend time with him. So I dropped my work by one day. So I went to a 4-day week and gave my dad one day, which meant I could look after him. I could go to doctor's appointments. I could just do the things with him and spend time with him and get to know him, really. And so I did that for 3 years. And when he passed, my work were like, are you coming back to work? And I was like, I need a year just to kind of get my head sorted out. And then we hit lockdown. So it was right in that phase. So we set up EV England in lockdown. And then when they were like, are you coming back? And I was like, actually, I would like to give a day of my time to this because I think it's important. And so because of the stuff I'd done, because I've been there a long time, they gave it to me. And because I was kind of showing them the importance of it, I was like, you know, I'm talking to DFT. I'm in the Houses of Parliament. I'm doing this thing. They let me have that. So because I was so involved in doing so much stuff, and EV England is all voluntary for the directors. There's no, like, it's all me giving my time and my money. There's a joke of my wife where someone said, oh, how much time do you give to them? I said, oh, you know, 7-8 hours a week. Oh, my wife's like, you know, 20, 25 hours a week, right? You know, I was, and a job and the kids and all the other things I do outside, you know, and the energy stuff and the Sussex EV. So like it takes a lot. And for years it's been a lot. But I was able to give that time and do it. And yes, we do have some staff, and yes, there is stuff going on then. And now we've got Vicky doing amazing things, and Sandrine, who kind of keeps glues the entire thing together. I've had to step back because I'm now doing my own thing. But I think I just kind of, because I could give time to it, I ended up being so involved in it, and it became such a big part of what I do and what I did at the time that, that's what it is. The blur, though, is a problem because for a long time, everyone just thought EVA England was me, and it's not about me. It's about the drivers. And so stepping back has been really good. And Vicky's done a great job about stepping up and being that person in front as well. But I don't want to be in front of this stuff. I don't want to be, you know, it's the War on Phillips show. It's not who I am.
If you operate a fleet of cars or vans, you'll know electric is the future. Transitioning to EVs can appear daunting, but with Europcar, it's effortless. Our long-term EV rentals eliminate the upfront costs, contract commitments, and uncertainty. Instead, you'll get total flexibility, a wide choice of cars and vans, and Europcar's expert support. So, make the switch without the stress and experience Europcarma. Search Europe Car Business.
So, but here's the conundrum for me, Warren, is that you are a big personality, and, you know, we started out by sort of questioning your importance. And what's clear to me is that you are one of those cornerstone kind of people that people look to, people respect. John touched on it, that natural leader. And I'm really curious as to where this came from and what formed this sort of very solid character, but with personality, right? You know, the hats that are in the...
He's not your typical IT dude, really. Is he?
Although Star Wars geek, hello. But the hats and the waistcoats and all of the different things. I seem to remember you arriving in everything electric in a 200-year-old car. I can't remember what it was, but it was...
100-year-old car, yeah.
I know they're not that old.
It wasn't 200-year-old. I was
prone to exaggeration, Mr. Kirby.
Yeah, you're not shy. You're very forthcoming. You're very helpful. You're generous with your time. You're dedicated to your family. But you are making such an impact on our industry. So take us back to that growing up period where, obviously, your mum, you had a good relationship with your mum. You didn't have a good relationship with your dad. I understand what that feels like. Male role models are really important in our lives. Who were the people that influenced you and brought this human being into being, really, in terms of character and, you know, your passion for life?
I honestly don't know. Like my mum, like I was quite a shy kid, so I was that real computer geek. I was a real computer geek, and in person, it wasn't who I was. Right? Most people didn't know me. I had some close friends, but outside that, like, I wasn't this, I suppose. And then when I got online, I could be whoever I wanted to be. So I was me. I could say the things I wanted to say, and I had every right to say the things I wanted to say and do the things I wanted to do. I liked computer games. I was quite good at them. So I got recognized for the fact that I could, you know, shoot pixels well, you know. I was good at like blowing up monsters, you know, and that kind of stuff kind of gives you confidence. I think what changed for me is that working and doing stuff and being recognized as being valued, I guess, I suppose. So where people listen to what you say because you're skilled and you have actual talent and skill. And then when I got headhunted, they wanted me to come on board as a consultant, but they wanted me to come on board as a trainer. And I was like, well, what do you mean? It's like, oh, like you're really good. You're on the forums. You're showing people how to do stuff. And we've seen you. Would you come and be a trainer? And I was like, no, I'll consult for you. I'll do this stuff. But I think it's really important that you're in and doing stuff. But if you want me to train, then you have to make me a trainer. You have to send me on the courses. And so I went, and they hired me, and I went and did like, I became an IT trainer. So I became an IT trainer, and that's part of why I like pink. I like things because I'm quite an intimidating guy, and so it was changing that to make myself more approachable and do these kind of things, and how you talk to people, and I learned a lot about how I could talk to people and how I've communicated with people and how I could make them understand stuff, and I guess that changed a lot of who I am and what I do, and then that changed my career path because I started to be able to do that with the people I was working with and the management. I could kind of bring them around to my way of thinking because I could show them, well, I could persuade them by showing them that I could find out what it was that they needed to be persuaded at, and then tailor my documents or my conversations or whatever it is to kind of bring those ideas in the way of what I didn't bring them.
You're some dude. And I look at you, Warren, and I think, here is a man who's an absolute gift to the world. And I genuinely mean this. You're a giver. You do this without any thought for yourself. How easily does that sit with you? That there are people like us who sit there and say, do you know what? He is an absolute gem of a man.
I don't know. Like, I find recognition difficult. I do find it difficult. And I'm very in the moment. Like, I find it hard to say, like, people say, what are you proud of? And it's like, I don't know. In the minute, like, last night, I won a couple of games on COD, and I was really proud of that. But in that second, it was great, right? I have things around me over here that mean stuff to me. So in the background, there's a few trophies, London to Brighton EV Rally. And then there's my thing I'm most proud of is in the last 2 years is I rode the London to Brighton bike ride last year after being so ill for so long. And I did it in memory of my aunt, who the hat is for her as well. And I raised like £1.5 grand for British Heart Foundation. I'm proud of that, but that's an achievement. That's just a thing, right? So in the second it's great, but I'm always like, oh, the next thing or whatever. There's one thing I'm incredibly proud of, which is a weird one, but if you're a parent, you understand this. So my kid was at school a couple of years ago, and they had a project, a citizenship project, I think it was, or something. It was like a project about, you know, the world in general. And they had to pick someone they admired, and they had to research them online. So come back with online research and do bits and pieces. And there was one caveat, which was you can't pick someone you know. And so my daughter successfully argued the point that she wanted to do me and did me with information from the internet and with all the bits and pieces on who I was and what I did and chairman of EVA England and all the bits and pieces. I have never seen this thing. I've heard about it because teachers at school talk about it and told me about it, but I have never seen it. But I know it exists because they were like, oh, you know, she argued us around and told us this and did this stuff. So so I'm incredibly proud of it. But
she's like you, yeah. Persuasive.
Like she, like you know, when you get called into school and the when you're there and the teacher wants to talk to you and it's like, oh, you know, what's happened here? There are three times where that's kind of come through for me and it's been like, oh, this is going to be interesting. And the first time was when Senna was in reception and the teacher called me and I was like, oh, what could she have possibly done? And she's like, oh, Warren, I just wanted to talk to you. You like this. I was like, okay, that's a good thing. She was like, oh, we were doing letters today and we were talking about this stuff and we got to W, to W, and because it's phonetics now. And Senna was bursting out of her skin to tell us what W was. And so we let her go and she went, "What? It's for Wookiee."
that's a massive moment right there.
Yes, I'm proud of that. And then the second time what they called me, then the conversations was, there's a power station down there and they burn natural gas. They burn, I think it's rubbish and recycling as well. They burn stuff. And the school went there and said, this is primary school. She must have been 10. And they were talking, and the guy there was talking about how renewables couldn't power the grid. And my 10-year-old took him to school, was like, my daddy says this, and my daddy says blah, blah, and with batteries you can do this. Like, she just went at him. And so the teachers were like, you know, she's a force to be reckoned with. That's my measure of success. That's it. That nothing else I do will be more important than that.
Anybody that disagrees with that doesn't understand the importance of parenting, quite honestly. You know, it is key.
Yeah, it is, but also it doesn't matter. Like, it's my thing. It's my measure. Mm. It's the thing I measure against. And it doesn't matter what anyone else thinks, really. And with a lot of this stuff, it's like I don't have time to worry about what someone else thinks. It doesn't matter. You know, I've got to make the world a better place for my kid and for all the kids, right? So Senna's part of, which is my kid, so I got to focus, but it's all of us. It's for everyone. It doesn't matter if you don't like me for it. If it doesn't matter if, you know, if you judge me for it or criticize for me. And in the same way, it doesn't matter if you appreciate it, because it's not about you. It's about her. And as long as she understands it, that's all I really care about.
But I'm getting a sense that you really respond very positively to adversity, to challenge and to difficulty, to change. And I think it does matter a bit to you. I don't know why, because you walk in the room and just like your daughter there with that teacher, she won't accept actually that energy person. She won't accept things. She's happy to change other people's opinion. You talked about you come across as an intimidating individual. Now, I will be honest and say I've never seen that. I don't find you intimidating. But I suspect that's because you've chosen to turn up a particular way, because at some point in your past, there was that perception. So you are about change, and you do seem to recognise that actually it does matter what people think and so on. I don't know where I'm going with this, because it's sort of a question. It's not on a question.
It's insightful.
Yeah.
It is insightful, because I think you're hitting the nail on the head here.
Mm.
Keep going.
Yeah. We'll find the nail in a minute. We're swinging the hammer in the dark, but there's a nail there somewhere. But adversity is a great teacher, I think. And it feels like you talked about illness, you've talked about being perceived as intimidating, you've talked about relationship with your dad. Adversity has been quite a common friend, but it has never, ever been something that tips you over the edge. You've always responded well to adversity. Why do you respond well to adversity? And don't say you don't, because you do.
I don't know if I do. I think everyone responds in different ways. I've had my dark times. I have reasons for doing things and reasons for living, and that is my family, and that is my my kid, really, you know, I want to be here for her for as long as I can be here for her, and I'm not going to be here forever. But I think everyone responds to adversity in the best way they can. Everyone is trying their best. Everyone is carrying stuff you don't see. And I learned that from my dad, actually. There were so many things that I didn't know about him until after he died, when I was at his funeral, and people are coming to me and say, "Oh, your dad did this for me. Your dad did that for me. And your dad did all these things that I didn't know about." But I would have been I would maybe understand him better. And it probably would have made our relationship better as well, because I didn't realize that he influenced me so much. So I do a lot of things for a lot of people. My friends are very important to me, but my wife and my daughter know that the greater good almost is the important thing, right? So if my friend rings me up and there's an issue and they need me, my family know that I will make a decision about who needs me more. And sometimes it isn't them. In that moment, it might be I need to go and see someone. I need to go and help someone. They're in trouble. Or they need help from me, right? Now, my family understand that. They understand that. Absolutely. My wife understands that. She learned that very early on, that I have lots of friends who I care about, that they need me, and that when they need me, I have responsibilities to them as a friend. But she knows that she comes first. She knows that it's family first, and I will always make those judgments. I guess that's just who I am. But my dad did that. I never saw it. I didn't know. He never showed it to me. Not until after he died, I learned all these amazing things he'd done, all the charity work he'd done, all these things he'd done really quietly with all these people. And I guess I'm not looking for recognition outside my family. So I want my kids to understand why a couple of weeks ago, she had her school play. It was on for 3 nights. And I want her to understand that one of those nights, I couldn't be there. I wanted to be in the crowd, but I couldn't be, because I had to be in London for an event. I was speaking at something, or I was talking to DFT, and I was doing things, right? I needed her to understand that I will judge it, but I will do the best I can. And so I was there for 2 nights, not 3. So it's that kind of thing that my dad didn't give me. He didn't give me the understanding of why he was doing stuff that I want to give her. But no one else matters. My wife, my kid, no one else matters. That's it. That's why I can't say I'm proud of this thing or proud of that thing, because it's not really important. There's things that I care about, but in that moment. And recognition's lovely, right? You guys have recognized me for the things I've done, and I get asked a lot about awards, right? Hey, there's an award thing coming up. We'd like to nominate you. And I was like, if you ask me about being nominated, I'm going to say no. If you nominate me quietly, great. That's amazing. That's a lovely thing you did for me. But if you ask me, we'll nominate you. I always feel like, why do you want to nominate me? I always feel like, what's the transaction here? So I always refuse. So recognition for me is my wife and kid, my friends, you know, that's it.
He's a genuinely good guy, isn't he? This is interesting. So to illustrate that, and to bring it back to EVs for a second, this morning we all belong to a number of WhatsApp groups, and this morning you were the very first person to drop the news that Andy Burnham, the new Prime Minister, is removing VAT from domestic electricity. You're a giver. You know, the first thing you do is, right, I'll go and tell my friends, you know? And you were the first one on that. It's a big decision by the Prime Minister. Is it big enough?
So this is interesting. So I put that in there because I kind of wanted to see what the reaction was to it. I kind of wanted to see what other people thought. I have my opinion, right? I was like, right, let's see what other people think. And it's like, so is it a good thing? Let's start with for everybody at a base level, this is a good thing, right? Reducing that VAT to zero, does help. It'll be interesting to see how it's worded, whether it's temporary or it's an actual, this is now what it is going forward. But my brain always immediately goes, well, how does that impact the things that we do and what's going on? And for someone like me, it's great. All this stuff is fantastic. I get 0% VAT. Most of my charging's at home. I have solar panels. I do all this stuff, right? It's all great, right? It works well for me. But it doesn't work well for everybody. It's not fair, you know? Like, so I try, all the work I do, all the bits and pieces, I've kind of refined it down to five basic principles or five things I kind of stand on, right? Fair, accessible, equitable, safe, accurate, right? That's kind of what I kind of work from as my sort of foundation, everything I try and do. So let's do the test. Is this fair? No. No, because if you haven't got off-street parking, if you haven't got your charge at home, you're paying 20% VAT. So let's just start there. You know, accessible, yeah, everyone has access to it. Equitable, it's not equitable because some people have and some people don't. Is it safe? Yes. Is it accurate? Well, no, accuracy doesn't fit with this one thing. But is it fair? It fails on number one. No, it's not fair. Don't have the ability to...
Sorry, I'm just going to debate with you just slightly because I didn't know this. I'm hearing this for the first time. So my gut reaction is, that's annoying. They haven't reduced the VAT on public charging. I guess everybody else's reaction, over 90% of the country, in saying I'm instantly getting a 5% on the thing that matters, 5% reduction on the thing that matters to me most, which is my energy bills, my home energy bills. And actually, everybody has a home energy bill. So therefore, Is it fair both to those that have an electric vehicle and to those that don't? Arguably, it is more fair, more equitable across the nation than removing 15% of VAT on charging specifically. So this doesn't feel like I'm supporting the energy transition. It feels more like I'm giving families that are hit hardest a 5% discount on their bills. Is that not another way to see it?
Yeah, this isn't a bad thing. This is not a bad thing. So if you're looking at the whole thing, for everybody, this is a good thing, but it isn't fair across the board for four aspects, right? And there's always going to be things like that. But if we are transitioning to a low carbon future, we have to electrify, right? We know this. Transport's such a big part of this, of our emissions and what we do. It's the biggest part of the puzzle. It's the reason I do this. The reason I'm in transport is because it's the low hanging fruit for me. It's the biggest target, right? Hey, if I can make a 1% impact over here, that's massive, right? If I make a 1% impact in housing, it's a bit so pick a big target, right? Go for a big thing. It's probably also one of the harder ones to do, but I like a challenge. So no, I'm not saying this is a bad thing. What I'm saying is that as we move forward with all of these things, if we don't build this stuff in right at the beginning, if we don't think about it right at the beginning, you build a multi-tier system, haves and have-nots, right? If you have a drive, if you have the ability, it is much better for you. The lowest, the people in this world, in this country, who have the least are the ones who get hit the hardest by this, right? Because we have to electrify, so cars are going electric, all this stuff is going to happen, and they are the one bearing the brunt of that bill because they can't charge at home. They cannot afford a driveway. They cannot afford this stuff. And if you then look at things like disability, those people are in the bottom of that as well because they cannot get jobs that pay well and do these things. So they don't have a driveway. They're often... left behind in these ways and now are getting another burden on top where they have to pay VAT on it.
I'm quite interested in your views on social justice, because what you're talking about is those who haven't got, those at the bottom of the pile. And I share your frustration. Mine comes from my wiring. Mine comes from my neurodivergence, that there should be justice and it should be fair. And I lived at a council house when I was a kid. My dad was a relatively poorly paid copper. And we didn't have a lot of spare money. And I'm rooted in all that stuff. My grandfather was a Labour councillor. So I'm rooted in that sort of socialist background, I suppose. Are you? Is that your story?
I don't know. I mean, we didn't have much money. My parents were always Labour voters. And in that way, my dad immigrated to this country with very little and built his way up. I think for me, it's about recognizing my privilege. You know, all of us have privilege, right? But not everyone recognizes their privilege. And privilege can be, you know, having lots of money. But privilege can also be being a man in a in this world, or being a white. Being white, I'm a mixed race, right? So, I see that a lot. I see that, you know, I've got friends. I grew up in West London, and it was a multicultural area. But I had friends who could walk down the road and didn't think the way I did, which was like, you know, is someone over there? Are they looking at me funny? Am I going to have trouble over here? Am I going to get into that bar? Am I, you know, like just those thoughts never occurred to them. And so recognizing my own privilege and understanding my own privilege has kind of built a lot on what I do and how I work, because it's not really about anything else. You know, I'm lucky. I've worked hard. Don't get me wrong. I've worked hard all my life. I've done all of it. My wife works incredibly hard. We earn enough money to allow me to have these follies like EVA England and do these things. Most people wouldn't be able to do it, but that's privilege. That's privilege. That's not been given to me. I've earned that privilege, but it's still privilege. I've chosen to use that privilege to do something good, but I could have chosen to use that privilege to fly to Spa and watch the Formula One, or I could have used that privilege to go on a Caribbean cruise. It's how you choose to do the thing you do.
True. Now, you've started Lucid Consulting in February, your own business. How will you use your privilege to deliver something through Lucid?
So Lucid Destiny is my consulting, and that is my gamer tag. So that's where it comes from. So when I was back in the day, when I was working in London, we had an opportunity to have any domain we wanted, and we had a deal with Vodafone to have any phone number, any six digits on a phone number I wanted. So Lucid Destiny was my domain. I got it in like 2000. So it's been around, and it's been my gamer tag and my Twitter tag, and I had it all, right? And my phone number, what can I say? My phone number spells Smegit. So if you're a Red Dwarf fan, that'll mean a lot to you, and if you're not, it won't. So it's really funny that Robert Llewellyn is, you know, genuinely, yeah, like, I wouldn't say he's a, like, a good mate, but he's a friend, right? So yeah, that's mental, right? My phone number spell, my last digits on my phone number spell Smegit. So Loose Destiny comes from that. That's where the name comes from. Basically, what I got made redundant in November, and I kind of had a choice of what I did. I could go back into IT and give, but whatever I did, it was a fork. I couldn't find a way that I was going to work for a company or work somewhere that would allow me to do EVA England, do lobbying and little bits and pieces I wanted, because it's a real juxtaposition of what I do. And so I made a decision that I was going to give a year. So it's running till November this year, was kind of just trying to find a place for me in the industry. And if it doesn't work, then I will do something different, or it'll be something else for me. But I have a year to kind of make this work. And what I want to do is basically help companies with this EV transition. It's all kind of moving. Everyone's doing stuff. And I know a lot about this, and I've been doing this for a long time. And the thing about it is that for me, it's those five pillars of what I do, but it's also keeping that consumer focus. So as much as I'm working for industry, I think for industry, if you remember that at the end of it is a consumer and you do the stuff that makes it better for them, if you can't look at it and go, hey, this is good for you, but this hurts the consumer. If you do this, it's good for you and the consumer. It'll be better and you'll do better and it will be longer. It may not make you as money right now, but in the long term, it will get you a much better result. And that's the kind of conversations I'm having. So it's about, you know, consumer advocacy inside companies and then policy inside companies. I do a bit of compliance work. My background is compliance. I know about bits and pieces. So, and there's conversations about security and IT in there as well. A little bit of public communications, but the main thing is to help companies navigate the EV transition, to help them do it in a way that isn't just good for them, but it's good for their customer and good for the end consumer.
And how can people kind of find you in that? Is it, do you have a website? Do you, are you LinkedIn is your company? So, yeah. Or where are we at? Is
no. So basically it's all been, it's reach out to me. It's all been word of mouth. It's linked to come, but all of it has been word of mouth. All of it has been referral. I'm not really advertising. But the other side of that is I'm incredibly picky about what I do, and I would rather right now I have an opportunity where I can be very picky about what I do. My wife still has a job. She's about to lose it, but she still has a job, so it's all good, right? And I can be very much about trying to help startups and trying to help foundationally build these pieces in the hope that in a year's time or in 2 years time, they become amazing things. And maybe they come back to me and maybe they ask me to help, or maybe there's something in there for me. But maybe there isn't. Maybe I just make the world a better place. It's not the end of the world. But I have an opportunity right now to do stuff with lots of people. I'm trying to do stuff on safety and accessibility and do all that kind of piece. I'm working with EVCI on accuracy at chargers, and that's a whole can of worms that's going to happen there. I'm talking to various people around. I've been this long enough now that I have lots of connections. I get lots of really good conversations. People open the door for me. I ring up and I say, hey, can we have a chat? And they're like, yeah. And people are happy to talk to me. And whether that is, whether that's members of parliament or OZEV or SMMT or, you know, BVRLA or whatever, people, if I message them, they will genuinely give me time. And right now I'm really enjoying that. And I'm really enjoying that ability to talk to people and help them and try and pull them in the right direction. And then the hope is that that turns into something that pays the bills at some point, maybe. So that's kind of it. The other bit that's just happened, which is just about, I think it's by the time the podcast comes out, it should be announced. When is the podcast coming out, by the way? Do we have a date when you're going to release this?
I'll get that date for you right now.
Cool. So there is something called so there's things called APPGs. They're all party parliamentary groups. And they are working groups inside parliament that do various bits and pieces. And there's one on EVs. It's run by the REA. It's called the Recharge Group. I should be chair of that group as of Wednesday, which means that I'll be in Parliament six times a year, or be in that group six times. You're talking about EV. So I will be leading that conversation between MPs and Parliament and companies and advocacy in that room. So that was kind of yesterday. I'm still waiting for the bits and pieces, but that should be. But it was So that allows me to do stuff. And again, that's voluntary, right? That's a voluntary thing, but allows me to be the advocate for people, not just about companies. It's about the end person. It's about the people at the end of it. And it's about keeping that recognition in place and keeping that understanding that, as well as making money, we have to make this a better transition.
Yeah, totally. Now, podcast is out on the 19th of August. So cool. Good timing.
Oh yeah, yes. It would be well.
Plenty of time.
Indeed.
You'll have sorted the world out by then.
Let's see.
This has been an amazing journey. And of course, before we end any of our podcasts, you will know this, Ryan, as a faithful follower of the the EV Cafe Takeaway podcast. We have a closing tradition. And that closing tradition is to present you And if you can make my tongue better, that'd be great. I present you with the EV Cafe magic wand. Rather than use this on myself to be able to speak properly and for my tongue to stop hurting, I'm going to pass it to you. And hand over the baton.
Thank you
there
very much, sir.
Goes. There you go. You got it. You got it. So
I have.
What would you wish for?
Oh God, there's lots of things I could wish for.
Stop being greedy.
I've been thinking about this a lot. I know. I've been thinking about this a lot. I guess the thing I would like to do is remove some of the fear in the world so that people could just be objective about stuff and not be scared about the change, not be scared about different people. And I think if we could do some of that, if we could remove that fear, make people understand, make people just safer in their lives, I think it would change a lot of the stuff that's going on with politics and with the acceptance that this is the way we've got to go and what we've got to do. So I think that would be my wish. And people understand that we've done this stuff, take responsibility. It's, you know, we're not having this fight about it. We just have to do better. And let's not be scared. Let's just go forward.
That is such a good, all-encompassing wish. It's not obvious, because fear, I think, is often the trigger for many, many, many people's responses to many different things. Totally. With all kinds of conflict, both, you know, personally, in communities, racially, fear is generating so many decisions in the moment. And we experience that, of course, in electric vehicles and in that whole environment as well. So we take a little bit of it for ourselves, but we also spread that around every kind of circumstance. And hopefully from this day forward, we'll start to see it disappearing into the mist. All thanks to Warren's wish.
How do you say?
This has been an amazing conversation, John. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely superb. And the thing I like about it most is that Warren, I don't think, sees that the things that he gets from life are because of the person that he is. So he says quite tritely almost, you know, I can phone an MP, I can phone OZ, I can get a response from this person. That is because of the type of person you are, that you give and therefore you receive. You do the hard work first, you build those relationships, you give of yourself. And that's rare and is a real I called it a gift earlier. It is a genuine gift, and you are an exemplar in everything you do. The love that you have for your daughter, I don't think I've ever heard anybody so focused on their creation as I have you and Senna. One final question I've got for you is Senna, Formula One, you mentioned. Yeah. Is it that obvious?
Yeah. Like literally, there's a picture of Senna up here.
Shameless.
Lewis Hamilton up here, and then Senna up here, and then I don't know if you can see. There's a Lego, mm-hmm. Lego thing. I'll just pull you to over here. There's the Ayrton Senna's Formula One car.
MP4.
There's another one. There's two over there as well. Yeah. So literally, it's Ayrton Senna. So the story behind that is we had a rule when Bottle was pregnant was that anyone could put a name on the list, that anyone could take a name off the list. There was no, it was an immediate veto. And so it caused a lot of strife between us, and we were just back and forth with various bits and pieces. But I put Senna on there, and my wife said no, immediately. No, not going to happen. And then there was a film club at work when I was at Mott's, and it was the Senna documentary. And it was like the director was there. And so we go and watch this documentary, and we watched it in like a cinema in Brighton. And then we had a Q&A session with the director. And then afterwards, I kind of wanted to go and chat to him, because obviously he'd met the family, and I was talking about, you know, when I was a kid watching Senna, I'm watching the crash and all the bits and pieces. And this guy spoke about, again, the things you don't hear about, like all seen as charity work and all the things he did in the background to try and make it better, using his privilege to make it better for, you know, kids in Brazil and doing all these things you never really at that time knew he was doing, right? The amount of money he gave and all the charitable work he did and all the things. And my wife was just there, so she got to hear me talk about this and talk about all these bits and pieces. And when we left, she said, oh, we can put Senna back on the list. Fast forward to us in hospital, and my wife wasn't in a good way, but we had the baby and she got to see Senna. She got to see it, and she just said, oh, I think she looks like a Senna. And that was, and at the time, I thought that could have, those were the last words she was going to say to me. So wow. There was like that kind of stuck. And then, yeah, there was never any doubt she was going to be Senna. So yeah. So, and weirdly, she's not even the only Senna in her school. There's another one. So which is like mind blowing. And then, I know, and a friend of mine, a very good friend of mine, he was like, blah, blah, my sister just had a kid and they've called their daughter Senna as well. And so, and again, after Ayrton Senna. So it's not even like, I don't know if it, I think with them, they might have heard him talking about my Senna and it might have percolated in their heads a bit, and that's how the name came for them.
And that's exactly what you do. You plant a seed and other people watch it grow. Yep, that. There we are.
Well, but Senna was like, she's my life. She's absolutely, she's why I do all this stuff. We all have a finite amount of time in this world. And I want her to be proud of me. I want her to think, hey, my dad did this. And I want her to think I can do this because my dad could do this. And he showed me I could do this. And therefore
you could
do
stop
this
right now and your daughter would always be proud of you.
That's very clear.
I hope so.
No, you can ditch that word hope. I mean, goodness me. because it's a reality. I think it can't not be. And we started out this podcast, John, didn't we, thinking or listening to Warren question his importance. And I think universally now, everyone knows his importance. We've heard it. And from the greatest accolade of being a fabulous father, a generous husband, you know, I think you've articulated really well that moment that formed you in the hospital that night or day or whenever it was. And it's those sorts of things that sort of will resonate with so many of us. You know, we've got moments where we were with our babies in that moment and what it did for us and how it made us feel. And I think you've brought that to life beautifully. And if we didn't know before, we now know why you're important, even if you don't see it. Your importance is massive. And you know, I think the reason, part of that reason, without, you know, finishing the counselling session, with part of the reason is because the most important things are under your roof right there in Guildford somewhere, Wokingham, down that way, right?
Brighton.
Brighton. Okay. Brighton. Well, I was miles off. But yeah, so down there in Brighton, that your world revolves right there with Star Wars F1 hats and geekiness. But
that's it. The only thing that overshadows Warren is his hat.
Thank you.
But mate, you're a very important person to us, to the wider community, and thank you for all you've done, for setting up, being part of the setting up of EVA England, for the lobbying, for the being a part of all party parliamentary groups, and just being a good all-round guy. Thank you for sharing your story today. It's been a real pleasure to be in the room with you. Thank you.
Oh, thanks a lot, mate. Thanks for having me. It's been a real pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah.
It's an our pleasure.
So, everybody, listen, if you want to know a little bit more about Warren Phillips, you can, yeah, you can phone him. You know, 0800 Smegget. I'm not sure actually what that number is. It's not his current mobile phone number, that's for sure. But anyway, there we go. But yeah, get in touch on LinkedIn, follow him on his socials, Facebook and all those kind of places. I think you'll be enjoying the journey if you do. And if you need some help as a company and you want to get somebody in that can look at your systems, your processes, your EV transition, here's a guy that will definitely add value for you. So if you want to listen to some other podcasts, head over to theevcafe.org/podcasts and you can hear me, John and Sarah rabbiting on with many wonderful, wonderful people across the industry. I think we're about due a montage of magic wands, but that is going to be in the top 10 for me, removal of fear. With that in mind, everybody, have a wonderful day. And until next time, we'll see you soon.